Bob McCallum, it's John Shannon on the program for this. John, what day is it? Tuesday.
It is all day.
And sure, all day? Not half the day? Other days of the week? That only last 12 hours?
We've decided it's going to be all day.
Even in February? Even in a leap year?
Yeah.
In any event, you distracted me immensely, Shannon, as you often do.
Well, you're easily distractible, Bob.
Well, I beg your pardon. So,
squirrel.
We're going to talk to Smith about the Raptors. But before we do that, a little bit of hockey news. So here's what we know. The Montreal Canadiens have a clinched playoff spot in the East.
Correct.
Barring the unforeseen, they will play the Toronto Maple Leafs in the opening round of the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. Not 100%.
They could still catch Winnipeg, who are fading fast. And it was a marginal concern a couple of weeks ago, which I think is when they got blown out by the Toronto Maple Leafs in a couple of games. But things haven't gotten much better. Can you analyze and tell me what is wrong with this team that many thought might be the best team in the East and might even beat Toronto and finish first?
You mean the North.
In the North. That's what I meant. Sorry. What's wrong?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think it's 8 of 9 they've lost now. Nick Ehlers, who arguably has been the most valuable player for the team this year, is injured, hopefully back for the playoffs. Their goaltender, Connor Hellebuck, has not had a Vezina-level year like he did last year. They do have a bit of a deficiency on the blue line, which they did try to get Jordy. They got Jordy Benn at the trade deadline, but was that enough? There's something missing from the team, and whether it's a disconnect between our friend Paul Maurice and the players or the season is just too long. Everybody I talk to in Winnipeg has got their fingers and toes crossed that they can get out of this funk for the playoffs. Do they have the ability to do that? Yes. But right now, there's just something missing from the chemistry on the team.
Well, and the timing, as you pointed out, is the part that's of great concern. The Toronto Maple Leafs, who've been in first place virtually the whole year, had their spell of, four or five games?
Yeah.
Where they did not play well and looked like they were on a slide, which they managed to not only put a halt to, but immediately went into a winning streak thereafter. And I don't know if we're seeing a lot more of that this year across the NHL than we have in past years, but it seems to me that every time I turn around, some team is on a 4 or 5 game winning streak and some team is on a 4 or 5 game losing streak. Do you attribute this to the COVID scenario?
I attribute it to the schedule. Like in Major League Baseball, you end up playing these 2 or 3 game series against teams and you're either hot or you're not. You know, that's a, you know, look at the Maple Leafs. They go into Edmonton and destroy the Oilers. And everybody thought the Oilers season was over. And ever since then, the Oilers have been on fire.
They can't lose. Yeah.
No, and at a certain point, and it was probably around the time we had Paul on the show, Bob, that we would have said Toronto, Edmonton, and Winnipeg are within an eyelash of each other. And right now, that's just not the case. And Winnipeg's in tough. Winnipeg is in tough right now. Do I think they can get out of it? Well, they certainly have the ability, particularly if Ehlers is healthy enough to come back for the playoffs. But there's just something missing. You know, in that 7-game losing streak, they had 7 consecutive losses. Paul tried to motivate the team in certain ways. He pulled Hellebuck 1 game, then he benched Scheifele the next game. And by the 3rd game of the streak, he had run out of bullets on how to motivate this team. Now, I think he's a great communicator, and I like him as a coach. But there ever since then, there's been something just missing, and I'm not sure what it is.
Well, but you use the word motivate in a fashion to imply that this team wasn't trying. Do you have evidence
disinterested? There are times I've talked to lots of people over this period of time, the last 3 weeks, that they say, "Boy, the Jets look disinterested," and that has to be a concern.
Well, and I think what we have to acknowledge is that kind of a situation can emanate from one player. If one player is disinterested and is vocal about it, he can literally infect a bunch of other players. And the next thing you know, the whole team is kind of going, "Oh, well, we made the playoffs. We're going to make the playoffs. You know, what we're playing every other night. What's the point?"
And 100%. I think there are a lot of people that are hoping that that is the case, and that they have the ability to turn it on next week during the playoffs.
Well, we've seen this scenario many times over the years in various sports with various teams, and the number of times a good team that isn't playing well can flip the switch, that's very, very rare. They better get better in the next, what do they got, one game or two games left?
They have two games left.
They better get better in the next two, just to show themselves as much as the fan base that they can actually do it.
Agreed.
Enough hockey. Basketball is our focus. The Toronto Raptors are out of the playoffs as of last night. This is no great surprise. But was it accidental or was it de facto deliberate? We'll address that. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star joins us next after these messages. It's McCallan. It's Shannon, as per usual, on the program. I think we are now at a point where we can effectively digest and examine the Toronto Raptors season. There are games to be played, but they no longer are of any consequence. And the argument can be made, and I am among those who have made it, that they really haven't played a game that they cared about winning in a long time. Now, I'm not talking about the individual players. I'm talking about the organization as a whole. Our friend Doug Smith of the Toronto Star joins us to chat about this. Well, in a phrase, Smitty, did they choke this up on purpose? Did management deliberately miss the playoffs?
I don't think they deliberately missed the playoffs. I think they deliberately decided they were good enough. They would be good with whatever happened, that they wanted to see whether kids could play. And if they won, great. And they snuck into the play-in, great. But if they didn't, they would have learned something that way. I don't think when it became apparent 2.5 weeks ago or so that it would be a long shot to get in, they made a conscious decision. Let's see. And we'll be fine with whatever happens. They would have liked to have one, maybe two, maybe six more significant games. But if they didn't get them, they were okay with that too.
Explain, if you will, Lowry's regular and prolonged absence from the lineup. Does that speak to them simply? Well, two things. Have they decided they're not going to re-sign him? Number two, did they sit him out because they don't care? They didn't care about making the playoffs, or perhaps didn't want to make the playoffs, but also it was giving them an opportunity to see other players at that position. What's your spec on that?
I think it's mostly they wanted to see what Flynn had and let him play 30 minutes a night or 25 minutes a night for a sustained period. And Lowry, I don't think there's a handshake deal for him to come back. I would be surprised if he's back. I think for as great as he is and as much as he's been to this franchise, it's time to move on. I don't think they can give him what he wants, and I don't think he can get what he needs from here. That said, maybe there's a path to him coming back, but I don't see it. And I think they needed to find out whether Flynn could play and how much he could play, and let's see what he's got.
Is it too early? I was going to say, is it too early, or is the sample size too small to figure out what they've got with the young guys?
Oh, I think they've got young guys, and they have a lot of potential, and they look like they're players, but they all look like they're players in games at the end of a very disjointed season. But that's all they have. That's the only baseline they can get. So they needed to find out whether this guy could handle the games, he could handle the responsibility. And if Lowry was the sacrifice for it, then I'm sure that was fine with him and it was fine with the organization. I think Flynn's a player. I think Harris is less of a player. but I think we know now more today than we did 5 weeks ago. That's for sure.
John and I had a conversation, albeit brief, I think yesterday, John, about Lowry and what would you offer him to come back? And I said, I wouldn't offer him any more than $10 million. And John suggested he was thinking $15 million. And it is not about any level of disrespect. We have plenty of respect for him. We understand he's been the face of the franchise effectively for, you know, a good period of time. May go down as the greatest Raptor, at least to this point in history. Although, I'm not so sure. That's another conversation.
What? You're not so sure? Come on.
I don't know. You don't think Vince Carter deserves to get some recognition?
This is what I think he deserves recognition.
Smitty, jump in.
This is what I've been telling people for years. I think Kyle Lowry is the best player. I think Vince is the most important player. And there is a difference. So I think they're 1 and 1A in that list.
Well, but I would say this to you, Smitty. And we have to acknowledge there's a generation of people that never saw him play. And yes, he was the most important player. Absolutely no question about that in terms of the building of the franchise. But at his peak, he was the, I think, 3 or 4 consecutive years got more votes for the All-Star game than any player in the NBA. Am I lying about that? It's something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, 2 or 3, right through that 2000-2002 era. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lowry's never been close to that. Lowry, as good as he is, and as long as he's played well, and as important to this franchise as he has been, he's never been that good. But, he's never been acknowledged as being that kind of player.
Listen, Vince Carter, I kind of understand what Doug's trying to say. The influence that Vince Carter has had on the Raptors and on the game of basketball in our country cannot be matched. He changed the landscape. He also was, in terms of the way people consume basketball, he was the king of ESPN. He was the king of the highlight, which I think allowed, because not everybody saw Carter play all the time, which allowed him to garner all those All-Star votes. But when you think about the impact of a player on a franchise to win a championship, Kyle Lowry, to me, is ahead of Vince on that level.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, I don't think Doug would argue. You wouldn't argue, would you, Doug?
No, I see that absolutely, and that's true. I think Kyle played with significantly better players than Vince ever did.
Of course.
I don't think that's even open for debate. There was a time in the early 2000s, late 1999 to 2001, mm-hmm. that people were talking about Vince Carter as one of the top 5 or 10 basketball players on earth. That conversation has never included Kyle Lowry.
No?
Never.
So that regard... The comparative impact of playing the game, Vince was really, really, really good. Besides just dunking, he could rebound, he could shoot. He was a very, very good three-point shooter, even when he was in Toronto. He had 9 in a game, I think, in a playoff game against the Sixers when he had the 51 points. So the breadth of his game was far more than just dunking. And he was, at one point, in the conversation of the best, very best, very best basketball players on earth. Mm-hmm. And people, I think, forget that because it ended the way it ended and they didn't win a championship and they only won one playoff series and blah, blah, blah. But his play was unbelievably good and consistently good.
And his legacy will be hurt as you...
Okay, actually, Bob, hold on. You said a word there, Doug, that I just like a little more detail on. Do you think he was more consistent over a period of time than Lowry was?
No, because he got, not when he was in Toronto, because he spent the last 2.5 years of his battling some injuries. But I think over when he went to New Jersey, he was astounding. He was really, really good playing with Jason Kidd in that team and didn't win, but that was a very good team. His career was, 23 years long.
No, but we were talking about his impact with the Raptors. We were talking about, if you had to sit here and say greatest Raptor of all time.
Well, I would say Vince had 4 extraordinary years in Toronto. I think Kyle maybe had 5. You got to understand, Kyle's played here, 9 years. And the first couple, he was okay. But it was DeMar's team. He backed up Jose Calderon at the when he first got here. And now I'm not sure he's the best player on the team today. I think he was for a long time, and he was the heart of a team that won a championship, which you cannot take away from. Now, I don't want this in any way to think I'm denigrating Kyle Lowry, because he's he's a great basketball player, great leader, and bled for this franchise and took it to heights that it may never achieve again. There's a very good chance the Raptors will never win an NBA title again. And he was integral to them doing it. So that you cannot take that away from him. The Vince Kyle debate, I think, will rage for years. And it's very personal because I think people forget how good Vince was as a player.
Well, and I think you're 100% right. And all I'm trying to do is object to the notion that there is no debate that Kyle Lowry is the best player in Raptors history.
There is a debate.
But I mean, our friends in the broadcast booth always refer to him as the greatest Raptor ever, over and over and over again. And the fact that the play-by-play guys may or may not have seen Vince on a regular basis the way you and
we know two of those three guys have. I mean, come on, Leo and Jack, they saw more games than you and I have, Bob.
Well, everybody, you know, this is the Orr Gretzky argument, you know. I'm not going to sit here and yell and scream about it, because I see both sides of that argument. My problem is, and the reason I brought it up, and I don't even know, I probably shouldn't have, is it seems to me, and Smitty, answer me if you think I'm right, that Carter's contribution has been diminished over time, partly because of memory and partly because of the fact that Lowry won them a championship, and maybe to a great extent, the last 6 months to a year of Carter's play in Toronto, where clearly he wanted out by that point. Agreed?
Yeah, I think there is a generation of fan who came into the game in Toronto in 2000, 2001 because of Vince, who resent the way he left, and that's clouded their judgment of him forever.
Yep.
And I think that's wrong. I thought it's been wrong since 2004, and I think it's wrong in 2021.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, just from a pure analytics perspective, and I'm far from an analytics guy, more people saw Kyle Lowry play. I have firsthand experience of what the Raptors were like in 2000, 2001, 2002. When you were around there, Doug, as a lot of us were. If we had 100,000 people watch a Raptor game, that was a success.
Yeah.
And that's across the country. Kyle's team gets watched by 450,000, 500,000 people on a daily basis. And the awareness of the franchise is so much higher across the country than it was 20 years ago.
And millions and millions in the playoffs, and the playoffs count more than the regular season does because that's the laser focus. And that's what people remember. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Kyle's playing to a far bigger audience, not just in Canada, but globally, mm-hmm. because the Raptors are a championship team and they've been in the playoffs 7 straight years. And that streak has now ended, but he's been part of sustained franchise success that Vince wasn't. But if you can't do it, it's apples and oranges and it's errors. And I think it's wrong to do it. If you put Vince in this day's starting out in this day's NBA, he'd be unbelievable. It'd be otherworldly for a very sustained long period of time.
Mm, yeah.
You're 100%
right. So do you, you retire both jerseys, both numbers?
I'm a hard ass when it comes to that. I don't retire numbers.
So am I.
I don't retire numbers, but I do something to honor them both at the same time. Mm. I think you have to do Vince first, because you can't do it for a guy who's still active, and Kyle will be active probably for a couple more years. So Vince would be first because of circumstances. But you got it. If you do it together, you have to do it together. If you're going to do it, you got to do them at the simultaneous because of their importance each way to the team.
Do you believe, we've morphed into this conversation, but I find it intriguing. Do you believe that the public's perception of an athlete, or even the media's perception of an athlete, centers around what they do off the court? In other words, Kyle Lowry portrays an image of being fun, talkative, cooperative in general. I think he's a little surly under the surface. But that's he knows how to sell himself when the camera's on. Vince was much, in my view, much more Jordan-like. He wasn't a pain in the ass, but he wasn't overtly cooperative. You dealt with him. I dealt with him, but you dealt with him a lot more than I did. How would you describe the comparison between the two? And do you think that affects the judgment of the skill set post facto?
Oh, I think there's a perception of the way that they handle themselves away from the game. And I think there's more focus in this era on how they do that than there was in Vince's era. Mm-hmm. And that Kyle's doing the Lowry Love Foundation and the Thanksgiving giveaway and the Christmas gifts and all that sort of stuff. And Vince, to his everlasting credit, used to run his camp here at U of T every year in the summer.
Yep.
Hell, he had charity games where a bunch of guys would come and run around the gym and draw 20,000 people on the caravan weekend.
Yep.
He did a lot of stuff away from the court that, because of the era, didn't have the same impact as the Lowry stuff does. But Vince did it. You're right. He's not a jovial guy. Kyle, at his heart, is a contrarian, but he's a kindly contrarian. He's good. He can be irascible and funny. Vince just was less personable, I think, in a lot of ways. I know Vince very well. I think when he was a young kid, he didn't really like it.
No, he was slightly standoffish.
He did it, but he didn't particularly like it. Kyle, who is now 35 and became a great player in his 30s,
good point,
likes it. Vince was a 21-year-old kid who had been, was overwhelmed at times by the popularity. Like, I remember being in Sydney at the Olympics and even regular season games on the road. You go on a regular season game on the road with the Raptors, and at 1 o'clock in the morning after the game, there would be hundreds of guys outside the team hotel waiting to see Vince or get his autograph. Mm-hmm. It has to weigh on you. He was the supernova, and I think it bothered him a little bit, and I don't think he accepted it because it was so new and he was so young. Kyle, in his 30s, knows how to play the game a lot more. And if you watch Vince late in his career in Atlanta and when he was sort of bouncing in Dallas, he was far more accepting of what he was than he was as a 21-year-old. Entirely understandable. Because at 21, 22, 23, you're overwhelmed by this. And maybe you don't like it because it's all-consuming. Mm. But by the time you're 30, you know how to deal with it. You morph into this leadership role, this mentorship role, this hail fellow well-met kind of guy that Vince was at the end of his career because he was 15 or 17 years older than he was at the start of it. And it's what Kyle was. When Kyle got here, he didn't want to be here. He didn't like us. We didn't like him.
No, he was pretty surly.
And he became this lovable kind of grizzly, girly kind of, tough, contrarian guy, which people appreciated because he was good. But he was also in his mid-30s and he knew how to do it. Vince, in his early 20s, didn't know how to do it. If Vince had become great in his 30s like Lowry did, people would have a far different perception of him.
How much do you think how the organization managed both of these players changed it? We're talking a difference between a Grunwald and prior to Glenn, a Butch Carter and versus the way Masai and his people have managed Kyle.
Well, I think the interesting thing, and I bring this up often, is I think Vince played for 4 general managers and 3 coaches.
Yeah.
And Kyle's played for 2 coaches and 1 general manager, 2 general managers, basically. And I think the turmoil around the team of the Vince era was part of it. It sort of, he looked around. He got 7 new teammates this year, 5 new teammates next year. I got a new coach. I got a new GM. I got to answer this. I got to do this. The team was going south. The team was morphing into Chris Bosh's team. Kyle Lowry got here on the upswing and got consistency in coaching, consistency in management, and was able to become what he has become. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Vince was, there was a lot of, I don't know if turmoil is the right word, but there were a lot of people around Vince who, too many people to give any kind of consistent message.
Well, we were a handful of years into the history of the franchise. This franchise was still developing, growing, feeling its way through. There was no support for Vince. I mean, who was the second best player on the Raptors after Vince? Boogie, maybe?
Maybe. It kind of morphed. Oak was for a little while.
Yeah, but it's just Charles Oakley at the end of his career.
Antonio Davis probably was for a little while.
And Antonio Davis was. I mean, and the year that when they signed Olajuwon, and that created another dynamic again.
It was Olajuwon in his last years, John. But a big name, but he wasn't a good player anymore.
But we're talking about in that locker room, when you look around, I mean, if Olajuwon spoke, some people had to listen. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it was a strange time to be around the organization, period.
Oh, it was bizarre because you lurched from crisis to crisis.
Right.
You know, Glenn drafted Vince, then he got fired, and Rob Babcock and Wayne Embry took over for a little while, made the trade for Jalen Rose and got some money to sign players. Then he was gone, and Rob came in, and Rob was, bless his soul, I love Rob Babcock as a gentleman. One of the nicest men you'll ever want to meet. Totally overmatched as an NBA general manager. And I think he knew it, and I think they knew it rather quickly.
Yeah.
Vince played for Butch, then Lenny.
And don't get me going on Lenny, okay?
Then I
please.
KO.
Please.
Then KO, and then Sam. He played for a bunch of different people. Kyle played for Dwayne and Nick.
Right.
And Masai was the general manager.
And Nick was on the staff.
Well, Brian started. And then Masai came back in 13. So it's apples and oranges organizationally. And I think that factors into how Vince and Kyle will be remembered. And I think people forget about the stuff around them that was going on with the Raptors in their respective eras.
We want to take the opportunity to chat about what happens next with this organization. Plenty of decisions have to be made, or maybe they've already been made or in the process of being made. And at the center of this, we assume, is still Masai Ujiri, the president and de facto general manager of the franchise, who has been invisible. We'll address that with Doug Smith when the program continues after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon with Doug Smith of the Toronto Star.
Hey Bob, can before we finish the Lowry conversation, I just want to ask Doug, his departure, if it does occur, is it a sign and trade? Is it do they tell him that he's allowed to go out and find a better deal? And if he doesn't find a better deal, they can come back. How do you see that happening?
I think they will pursue some sort of sign and trade deal that will get them, will get Kyle more money and will get them something in return. Whether that happens, I don't know. I think they'd be quite okay with him just going and getting some money to spend on other guys. I think the preference is they get something, a pick. Okay. An old backup guy. But again, I don't think either way is going to cripple them or concern them. They're not dead set doing one thing because they got to leave all their options open.
Miami was the team on that note. Miami was the team that was apparently as active or most interested in Lowry. The Lakers are the team that needs him the most. Agree or not?
Oh, absolutely. The Lakers are, I don't know. The Lakers, if they want to make a two-year run, should give him a two-year contract to play with LeBron for the next couple of years of his life, for sure. Because they need to win a championship now, and Kyle is ready to lead them to a championship now. And they have no point guards. Their backcourt is an absolute mess.
And money should be no object for the Lakers.
No, it can't be an object. It certainly can't. But they, again, the cap realities of the Lakers situation is they can't pay Kyle a lot of money. And if that's what's going to drive him, that takes them out of the mix because there is nothing on the Lakers roster that the Raptors want. Nothing.
No. You don't think the Sixers are in the middle of this too?
Oh, I think the Sixers will be in. I think if you look, and this is why I don't think they did a deal in February at the trade deadline, was that your options were so limited. They were basically Miami, the Sixers, and the Lakers, and nothing worked. Around the draft and around free agency, a whole bunch of other teams jump into the fray. Does Dallas want a backcourt made for Luka? Does Portland want to blow it up with Lillard and McCollum and Kyle being there to be ready to win quickly? Does Chicago need him with Vucevic and Levine? And your options are so many, so greater around the trade or the draft and the free agency that it was not surprising to me at all that the Raptors waited, because the market expands and you want the market to expand for a guy who has the unique skill set and contract set of Kyle Lowry.
All right, let's get to the future. And let's start along the same lines here. You know, we're talking about Kyle Lowry potentially leaving and probably leaving, and what you can get for him. Let's forget free agent acquisitions. Let's forget draft. Is this team comfortable with the nucleus in moving ahead? Or could we see a Siakam, an Anunoby, someone of significance get traded?
No, I think they're entirely set with VanVleet, Anunoby, and Siakam as their three best players going forward, surrounded by, they have an intriguing group. Birch, maybe Gary Trent's a player. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he is. And then you got some other fringe guys, Watanabe, maybe Bembry, maybe Freddie Gillespie. But their core, they're quite happy with. And I tell you this, I've said this and I'm going to keep saying it. I don't think in 2 years, it's out of the realm of possibility that the best player on a team is OG Anunoby. And I think they're quite willing to go forward with Fred, him, and Siakam as their guys.
Well, he might be the best player on the team, but the team won't be good then.
I think the team will be top three in the East, and then you take your shot in the playoffs.
Well, maybe.
Which is what they did with Kawhi, which is what they did with DeMar and Kyle. And some days it works, sometimes it doesn't.
I always have a ton of respect for what you write and what you say, Doug. I just don't see that at all with Anunoby. I just don't.
His skill set's off the chart and just getting better.
Yeah.
Like he is so much better a basketball player today than he was in December. It's not even funny. And that's without having an offseason to develop. You put him in their program this summer. When he comes back next year, I think he's more forceful. He's a better shooter. He's freed up to be a better player because there aren't guys around him like Norm Powell getting to the rim and taking the ball out of his hands. Mm-hmm. Maybe Lowry's not there. I think OG's got a chance to be really, really, really good.
Wow.
All right, so give me your take on Siakam, because statistically, he scores points, but he doesn't shoot well. He misses shots with great regularity. He goes to the rim deliberately now. It was intriguing to watch him in the early part of his career because he had that really quick step that he could take where he'd blow by people and get the layup. Is he developing as a basketball player, or do you see, are we being exposed to some of his flaws now?
Well, I think we're seeing flaws that were probably always there, but were lost because of the players he was playing with, or were missed because he was playing with Kawhi and Kyle at his absolute peak. And yeah, maybe his one-on-one skills aren't brilliant, and maybe we're seeing that, but he's still a really good player, and he can do one thing a lot of guys can't. He can score baskets in different ways, and you need that on your team. He's still really good, and I get the last 30 seconds or last minute and a half of close games, and he hasn't had a great amount of success there. Not a lot of guys have, and frankly, that if that's six games a year, then maybe there's three other games where someone else gets to do it. I don't see that being a huge detriment to his game. He's really, really good. And I think he's going to, I don't know if he'll be a perennial all-star, but I think he'll be an all-star again.
A couple of things on that. Don't you think that the Siakam we saw this year didn't sneak up on anybody? So that there was a lot of people that in previous years would have said, well, he's okay. And then he made the move and everybody said, wow. And then there was a gap this year between expectation and result. And we might have expected too much.
I think the expectations are still a little bit high on him because the team's had so much success and he got the maximum contract and he was the guy. But I think people's opinions of Pascal are clouded by the salary he makes as opposed to the skills he brings. And that's sports wide. Your best player, your highest paid player is the lightning rod. And because he's the highest paid player, he is the lightning rod. But I don't think it diminishes what he is as a player.
The two guys they brought in to play center have certainly changed the way the Raptors play basketball. They actually get the occasional rebound. And of course, this was one of my pet peeves all year was they didn't even try and get rebounds. And now you got a guy most of the time underneath the basket that's at least trying to get rebounds. But these are young, inexperienced players who may grow at some point into very good centers. Or, in your opinion, do you have to go out and find one of those guys?
No, I think the way this team plays and the way it's constructed, I'm okay with Birch as your starting center. He's a little bit undersized. He's 6'9". You'd like him to be 6'11", but he isn't. But he works hard. He's showing some offensive range that we didn't think he had because he never got to do it in Orlando. He's able to stretch the floor a little bit. He's a tireless worker, and he rebounds really well. Gillespie is less, he's less intriguing to me because there's a lot of holes in his game. Mm. He's got 3-foot range. Birch has maybe, he's making corner threes. I'm not sure he's in the best shape he could be in. And I think that's a deal for them in the summer is to get him physically fit so he can bang a little bit more and be a little quicker. But they need to expand his offensive game or he's just another backup center. And whether he can or not, I don't know. I don't imagine that anybody's ever tried with him before either. Yeah. So you got to see what you can make him.
Are we making too much out of the Masai contract? Or are they internally laughing at all of us?
No, I think they're doing exactly what Masai's been saying they've been to do for a year. They're waiting until the season's over, then they'll address it. And the season's over Sunday, and then they'll address it. And I think he'll come back. Because I still don't think there's anything out there to intrigue him. And I don't know whether he'll come back on a 5-year deal. He might come back on a 2. He might come back on one that rolls over year to year. I don't know. I think he'll be back, but I think no one should be at all surprised that it's taken this long because for a year, Masai has been telling us it's going to take this long.
Right.
So there you go. That's, Monday we start thinking about that because the season's over and Masai and Larry sit down and they hash out whatever they're going to hash out. But I think they will.
All right. What I've been trying to get at here is what are the Raptors going to do during the offseason and what are their needs? Here's what I believe. COVID aside, this team might, if you bring them all back, might make the playoffs next year, but they might not. I'm not nearly as optimistic as so many others are. I don't know whether you need to have a point guard and a shooting guard, but I'm not sure Flynn beside Van Vliet is the answer. So maybe you could go there. But if you have to, I think Masai, assuming he's here, is going to want to improve this team. And it's not just about improving the bench. It's about finding at least one other starting piece. And maybe that piece emerges from in camp in the fall off the bench, but you're going to have money to spend, Doug. If you don't re-sign Lowry, you will have money in the bank. And it's not going to the Greek Freak, which I think was the plan. So who's it going to? At least not give me names if you want, but what position? Where are you spending it?
I don't know. I don't think I can give you names because things got to shake out around the league, but they need a starting 2-guard. Mm-hmm. And you cannot start Van Vliet and Flynn. Like you can start Lowry and Van Vliet. You can't do that. Flynn is a backup and Van Vliet's a starter. You need a starting 2. I'm not sold that it's Gary Trent Jr. because I think his best role is a scorer off the bench. And I think you need a stud in there. You need an old, big defensive guy who can make a 3-point shot. You need to upgrade at the 2. You don't really have a backup small forward right now. Have anybody behind Ananobi, really, because Watanabe's not there yet. I don't know what he becomes, whether he becomes the 9th or 10th or 11th guy on the team doesn't really matter. So there's my 2 spots. A starting 2-guard, and a backup three who are good, not just bit pieces. Not in, you know, I have nothing against Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, DeAndre Bembry, guys that they've tried in that role, Paul Watson, guys they've tried in that role. They're just not good enough for a championship-level team. So that's where I'm concentrating, because I think you're set at point guard with Van Vliet and a little bit of Flynn. Mm-hmm. I think your 3-4 of Anunoby and Siakam is solid, not really well backed up. I think obviously Birch is good, but there's an improvement to be made there if you can find the guy, but I'd be happy with him. Boucher is pretty good for another year as a backup four, but you need a starting two and you need a backup three badly.
Any want to throw a name out there? Have you thought about anybody who's have you, I know you look at the free agent list. Is there a two out there that kind of fits for you?
There really, I don't think there's a free agent guy out there, but you could use the money to trade into that position. If you have cap space, you can trade into it. I'm telling you something. If things go totally south in Portland, I would make a call on CJ McCollum tomorrow, because I think they're ready to blow that up. So maybe you do what you got to do. You make the call, you see how you can work it out. Maybe you can't, but that's the kind of impact player I think you're looking at. Because Masai and Bobby aren't going to tinker on the edges. If they're going to make a deal, they're going to make a Kawhi Leonard deal.
They're going to make a deal that makes sense. I 100% agree with you. They're going to make a deal that has an impact player and a player that has value now. This is not about the earlier deal with Portland where you got a couple of guys who were sitting on the bench who might be better than what you thought, both pretty young. You want to get a guy who's going to be an impact player who's proven himself, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it also speaks to what the East is like. The East is winnable even next year. I mean, the West is tougher. The West is a much deeper, tougher division in the conference. And if the Raptors can retool quickly, then they have a chance to get back into at least the final four.
Oh, I think they're not that far off from it at all. And whether, you know, it depends what other teams do. You don't know what Brooklyn's going to do with their three guys. You don't know what whether the Knicks eventually turn into the Knicks again. I don't know. I think they probably will, because history suggests they will. You still don't know what's going to happen. If Philly goes in the toilet this year, does that break up Embiid Simmons? I think Milwaukee is basically near the end of its window. And Miami is just sort of just this team. They're kind of there. Boston is I wouldn't be at all surprised if there isn't, and you know, we talked about this with the great Bob Ryan a couple months ago. Boston is probably going to not to the reason that Brad Stevens is a bad coach, but Boston might be looking for a new coach in the summer.
Yeah, they might.
There might be a couple teams like that. Milwaukee might be doing that too if they fail.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised in the least if Milwaukee's looking for a new coach. Boston's looking for a new coach. I think Portland will be looking for a new coach. I think there's all kinds of things out there. Indiana, I don't know how our pal Nate's gonna, if he can survive this mess that's there now. No, I don't think Miami's ever gonna fire Eric Spoelstra. He'll live there till he doesn't want to work anymore. But that's a roster that doesn't scare me. I don't think, you know, Brooklyn is a very intriguing team because they got a lot of guys, a lot of old guys. And I don't know how much longer they're going to stay healthy and together enough to be consistently winners for 4 or 5 years.
Well, maybe they can call Vince and get him to come back. He's only been out for a year. We got to go.
They could trade for DeMar.
Well, they could do that. Time is our enemy. We love the opportunity to chat with you. You know that. And we thank you as always for your time. You're most gracious. And we'll call on you again somewhere down the road. Thank you.
I'll be here to answer. Thanks guys. Pal. Good to see you again.
See ya. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star. John and I will be back to wrap it after these messages. So, McCowan, it's Shannon again. Thanks to Doug Smith of the Star for joining us today.
So, let me get this straight. Okay. You loved Vince all those years.
Oh, I love? No. Respect? You bet.
Yeah. It was an interesting time to be around the organization because our pal Richard Petty, who was running the whole kit and caboodle, then there was a huge fence around Vince, and even sure when and the fence was, whether it was Raptors PR, whether it was, you know, his mom, There was, you know, there, in my opinion, and having and being an employee there at that point, there was a set of rules for everybody, and then there was a set of rules for Vince. And I think the I think his teammates saw that, and I think a lot of people within the organization saw that. I think the hockey team saw that, and it drove people in the hockey team nuts.
Yeah, and I mean, his mom being around, and you know, parking spots, everything was an issue when it came to Vince. But we're talking about on the court, and I respect Kyle Lowry and what he has brought to the organization and his importance. But as a player, the greatest player that the Toronto Raptors have had is Vince. And I know there's a time frame on this for everybody. Like, we could say Kawhi was the greatest player, but he played 1 year. I don't know what the time frame is.
I think people have forgotten Kawhi already for all intents and purposes.
There are people who will say Bobby Orr doesn't qualify because he didn't play long enough in the NHL.
Yeah.
You know, and he had eight great years.
Yeah, it's a very interesting discussion. I truly believe because the market size that our basketball fans in our country now has just grown that much more.
We got to go. We thank you for watching or listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.